And you've known this for years. So what are we now, the family who keeps secrets? Like, what is this?
So I logged on to Ancestry and opened the message, and at the top of the page, it said parent-child connection.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Hinken.
And I'm Laura Wexler.
And this week on the podcast, Found Families, we have two stories about reconnecting with long-lost and never-known family.
So this first story is shared by Kara Kelly, and I love that it begins and ends in a diner, and it goes many surprising places in between. Take a listen.
It was a gray January day in 2001, and I was at the Towson Diner with my mom and my brother. And we were in a hard season. We had recently lost my father, had passed away of a heart attack. And so it was that season, right? So we sit down for breakfast, and my brother looks at me, and he says, "So we kind of have something to tell you." I'm like, "Okay," which is never what you want to hear, right? You never want to hear that, something to tell you. So I'm like, "Okay." And he's like, "So as it turns out, we have a brother." Right. Right. So immediately I look at my mom like, "Out with it. Like, you have some explaining to do." And she's like, "You know, not my story." So I'm like, "Okay, continue." So he was like, "Yeah, so a couple years back, I was rooting around in Dad's things, and I wasn't really supposed to be, and I was looking for my own birth certificate when I happened upon a divorce decree that was Dad's to his ex-wife's, and in it, he gives up his parental right to the mother of the child." So immediately I'm like, "Wait a minute, so Dad was married too?" And he was like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "And you've known this for years. So what are we now, the family who keeps secrets? Like, what is this?" So I look to my mom. I'm like, "Did you know about this?" And she's like, "Of course I knew about this." You know, and I'm like, "Okay, so out with it, you know, like from the beginning." She was like, "You know, it was a different time. It was 1967. You know, you have to understand, things were different then. And, you know, it was your father's college girlfriend. They got pregnant, and they thought that the next best thing to do was to get married. So they scheduled the wedding. And the day of the wedding, your father was standing at the altar, and she never showed." And I was like, "Ooh, this is getting worse and worse." So eventually, they got married by the justice of the peace. They tried to make it work, but it didn't work. And the mother of the child, you know, said to your father, "Listen, I'm reconciling with, I don't know if it was an ex-boyfriend or a current boyfriend or another anybody. There was somebody else. And I want him to raise the child." And so after a lot of heartache and hemming and hauling and back and forth, this, that, and the other, he did what he felt like he should do in that moment, right? And she's like, "You have to remember, this is 1967. It's not today." So it's 2001 when we're hearing this story. This is before Facebook. This is before the internet, what the internet is today. This is before pulling out your smartphone and finding anybody anywhere, right? So we did like a basic search on the internet to find him because we knew what his name was. But all that really came up from it was a white pages listing that he lived. We thought maybe it was him, wasn't sure, over the PA line, right? And so the whole thing goes cold. So fast forward to 2008, about. My mom had started dating again, and she was out on a date with her boyfriend at the time, and who would eventually become her husband. And so she's out on a date, and they're talking about their previous unions, you know, and she's sharing this wild story about her late husband's first marriage and how he lost a child in the marriage, da-da-da-da. And he's listening, and he's nodding, and he's listening. Uh-huh. And he said, "I've heard this story before." And my mom, of course, hasn't told him the story. So she says, "What do you mean?" He said, "What was the name of the ex-wife?" And so for the sake of this story, we're going to give her a different name. We're going to call her Brenda. Brenda C. So she said, "Her name is Brenda C. Why?" And he said, "Yep. Yep, I've heard this story from Brenda. I'm her boss." Hand to God. And she's like, "I'm sorry, what?" You know, like, "What? Well, this is amazing. Like, you know, my kids want to meet their brother. You can make this happen." And he's like, "No, because they worked in a hospital system. And so it was privacy, privacy, privacy." And he's like, "Unfortunately, there is absolutely nothing I can say or do." So it runs cold again. And it's wild, right? So fast forward about a year and a half or so later, and my mom and that guy she was dating are now engaged. And it was 2010, and I had just moved back to Baltimore, and I was living with my mom at the time. And she gets a phone call. She picks up the phone, and it's her fiance, and he said, "Joanne, Brenda C. is sitting at the bar at Bill Bateman's in Towson right now. And she no longer works with me, or she's retired," and they were at a retirement party, and it was off campus. So he said, "It's now or never. If you want to meet her, get down here." So, of course, my mom runs into the room where I'm sitting, and she's like, "Brenda C. is at the Bill Bateman's in Towson." And I'm like, oh my God, what are you going to do? And she's like, "I don't know." And I'm like, "Well, you should go." And she's like, I'm going to go. And I'm like, "Okay." And so she leaves the room, and then she comes back, and she's got an armful of photos, like photo albums. And then she's got the photos from the funeral, you know, that you glue on the poster board. And I'm like, "What are you doing with that?" And she's like, I'm going to take it. I'm like, "Oh, this might not go well, you know, like," and I'm like, "Okay, good luck." And so she goes. She goes to the Bill Bateman's in Towson. And she marches in there with her photos. And she finds her, poor woman, taps her on the shoulder. And like this lovely, unsuspecting person, you know, turns around and is like, "Hello." And my mom's like, "Hello." And she's like, "Hi." You know, and then my mom's like, "Hi. Hi, I'm Joanne Kelly." And then Brenda, of course, replies, "Oh, nice to meet you. You know, Kelly, actually, that's a good last name. I used to have it." And my mom said, "I know. And his birthday's tomorrow." To which the recognition hits poor Brenda. And she said, "Oh, my God, you're Tony's wife." She said, "Yes, I am." And Brenda says to my mom, "I never made it right." And my mom said, "Well, it's not too late, because my kids want to meet their brother." So about 2 months after that, it was another January day, and we are, I kid you not, back at the Towson Diner. And he's there before we are. And he's standing at the top of the stairs. So we pull up and we go to walk in. And it is like
seeing a ghost. He looks just like my dad, especially as a young man. So we're all crying, right? I'm crying, my mom's crying, my brother's crying, his wife crying, we're all crying. He probably felt like a zoo animal at the time, right? Because we're just staring at him crying. And it hits me, right? So my father never had the chance to meet him. He never had that chance. He never had the opportunity. Call it Baltimore, call it mystical divine intervention, call it what you want to call it. But he is all the best parts of my dad, and now we get to have him. Thanks, Weston.
These stories are remarkable. Like, just, you know, the coincidences that have to happen in order for this connection to be made. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with one more story of found family. So this next story is shared by Susan Ellsbury, and it's also about a reunion. Take a listen.
Christmas morning 2018 was not unlike most Christmas mornings my husband and I had spent together over the years. We made coffee and breakfast and opened some gifts and looked forward to having dinner with friends in the afternoon. That morning, however, I received an email from Ancestry saying that I had a message waiting. I had joined Ancestry a few years before because I was looking for information from my birth about my birth family. I had been adopted as an infant. So I logged on to Ancestry and opened the message, and at the top of the page, it said parent-child connection. So I thought, well, here they are, or one or the other or both of my mother or my father. So I started to read the letter, and it was from a man, and I thought, well, this is my birth father. And so I got to the end of the letter, and I realized that it was not from my birth father, but it was from my son, Douglas, whom I had given up for adoption 31 years before. So I was obviously stunned, and just thoughts were reeling. It was probably the most life-affirming moment I have ever had. Not because I received a letter, just because I received a letter from my son on Christmas Day, but Christmas Day is also my birthday. So it was the best birthday gift I could have ever received. I quickly emailed him back within the hour, and a very robust email communication ensued, so much so that we had to take it offline because Ancestry has a character limit. So now you know. the week between Christmas and New Year's, we wrote to each other every day, sometimes several times a day, and we agreed to meet at One World Cafe. And, one thing I wanted to say, back up there, why did we meet at One World? One of the things that we learned about each other in that week was that we lived a mile from each other. And that we had been for the past 3 or 4 years. And so, and we also had some mutual friends and acquaintances in common, which, a small tumor, right? So we met at One World. On New Year's Day, we knew one another instantly. And it was the first time that either of us had been in the company of a blood relative. It was quite a remarkable thing to look in his face and see mine reflected back, hear his sense of humor and turn of phrase, and just see myself, really, for the first time in another person. So we talked for a lot of hours there and sort of caught up. And even though the question didn't officially come up, it sort of organically made its way in different ways. Why did I give Douglas up? Well, so I told him this. In May of 1986, I was graduating from nursing school at Shepherd College in West Virginia. I had a job lined up at Georgetown University Hospital, was starting in the fall. I had also been accepted to their nursing program to complete my baccalaureate degree because Shepherd at the time only offered an associate's degree. And I was pregnant after my first time, so I was a pretty late bloomer. I went home and tried to figure out what I was going to do. Marriage was off the table. Because of where I was spiritually at the time, I was not considering abortion. My family was incredibly chaotic. My mother is mentally ill, and she had been hospitalized on and off the years prior. And my father had remarried a woman who gave new meaning to the word wicked stepmother. Words. And so I felt like adoption was probably his best option and mine as well. So I moved out of my house and I started my job and I had Douglas on February 16th at 11:15 in the morning at Sibley Memorial Hospital via cesarean section. When he was born, the doctors were a little bit concerned about some potential medical issues. So they kept him in the hospital for a little while for some observation, further testing. I was discharged home, and he stayed in the hospital. During that time, the private adoption that I had set up several months prior had fallen through because of these potential medical issues. And so when it was time for Douglas to be discharged, I took him home with me and tried to figure out what my next move was going to be. I contacted another agency, and in about a week and change, I drove him there, and I relinquished my parental rights. It was the hardest thing that I have ever done, and I really don't know if I made the right choice. I don't know, standing here right now, if I made the right choice, and I really don't know if I'll ever know if I made the right choice. I got a letter from his adoptive mother about 18 months later, reporting that he had made all of his developmental milestones plus some, and she sent me some pictures of him playing in the sand at the beach, and I thought, well, maybe I did make the right choice, and maybe he will have the life that I hope that he'll have. So, of course, I thought about him over the years many times, especially on his birthday, and but I never thought that I would ever hear from him again. And my shame and guilt really kept me from feeling like I could ever try to find him. So when I got the letter from him on Christmas Day saying that he actually did want to know me, I was just astonished. It's just been just a miracle in my life. I have not had any other children, so to be able to be a mother to my son finally has been quite miraculous. We are very close. We email and text and talk on the phone, and he comes for dinner on Sunday, and he is a part of our family. So my story here on the stage is over, but the story that I am making with my husband and my son and our family is just beginning.
It's such a beautiful story.
It really is, and I love that she says at the end, you know, now we're sort of figuring out how to be in each other's lives and be, you know, mother and son and what that means now. Yeah, these kinds of reunion stories that end well are always so, they just feel so good because there's a million ways in which it could go terrible.
Or that right? They just never.
Or they never happen.
Yeah
like the closing that loop. We're glad that you got to listen to these stories with us, and you can visit stoopstorytelling.com to learn about shows and to listen to stories. We want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast, and we will be back soon with more stories from The Stoop.